But like I said, this year I was supposed to have given, but I have never given in my life. I just prepared it for then. At the Summer Beit Midrash, their topic, as Avi knows from his brother, was what?
Was
people with disabilities. I think, and right, the way Ray Clapton called it was people with disabilities, the right to religious experience, question mark. Just why, that's what it says on the top of this. So at the time I tried to figure out what I was going to talk about. So what I decided to talk about is a principle that comes up in the Gemara in several places, two places really, primarily, called Nachat Ruach, the original context being Kedei Lasot Nachat Ruach L'Nashim. What? Though it is not the only time. This is not the only time it comes up, thank you, Zachariah. It actually is the only time it comes up in Shas, but not the only time it comes up in Psak, which we'll see in a little bit, in context, means that we allow women to do something which is either usser, or seems like it should be usser, or should have been usser, Shum Maris Ayin, or something, but we allow them to do it, Kedei Lasot Nachat Ruach, which means something like we want them to have a certain religious experience. Something like that. Now, in modern articles, you'll often find this celebrated as, you know, this huge feminist achievement in Chazal, and is the basis for all these feminist psakim, why we must give people the right to religious experience, and therefore we should be mekel, and we should, etc., etc., etc. It's not the world's most plausible read of the sugya, as we'll see. More importantly, using Nachas Ruach L'Nashim as a basis to claim the right of religious experience in the context they want to use it is probably the most patronizing thing I've ever heard in my life, because the point of the Gemara is that the women had absolutely no idea that what they were doing was meaningless and you were just doing something to make them feel good. To tell people, Meikara, that you are letting them do something because they're whiny and need religious experience, but they should know that it's meaningless, I find to be patronizing and not what the Gemara meant in its original context. Though it may be true, and we'll see to what extent it is true, that the Gemara does seem to have, as one of the Gormim Mimpsak, this notion of Kedei Lasot Nachat Ruach, a recognition that there is value to allowing people to do things that give some religious experience, even if they are not obligated in. Okay? Fine. Before we actually get to the Gemara itself, I want to make a few points. So, the framing of the question, as it finds itself in all these modern articles, is really, is there a right to religious experience? The answer, b'derech klal, is no. Right? There isn't. I put here, just for fun, right, this is from a nice little kuntres. Sometimes I just give you books here just so you know they exist, so maybe you'll read them one day. But it's a nice little book by Chaim Cohn. He was a justice in Israel. There's also the Sarat Datot, I think, or something, or Sarat something. I don't know. Maybe Zachariah knows. I don't know. No? Okay. I don't know. But he writes a book, a nice little book about human rights in Bible and Talmud. And he makes the very clear point. It is difficult to speak about human rights in the Jewish legal tradition for the simple reason that this tradition is a religion, I think that was, of law. I.e., as it states about itself, it is a divine law. Such a law by its nature does not grant rights, but imposes obligations. The word right, in its modern meaning of that which is coming to me, is not to be found in either the Bible or the Talmud. Now, he then continues, and at some point I wrote an article where I integrated some of his argument there, and I summarize it here. Right. When writing a book about human rights in Allah, he correctly notes that rights are difficult to speak about in the context of the Torah. Mitzvot are commandments, and Allah is about duties, not rights. While certain rights can be derived from those commandments, right, his example is the right to life exists in halacha, but it's only derived from the prohibition to kill others, meaning I have a right to life vis-a-vis other people because they are forbidden by God to kill me. Right? So the rights express themselves as responsibilities towards God, which incidentally translate into the rights of individuals. Right, but obligations are the operative categories. Right, this is generally true about halacha. Halacha very, very rarely talks about rights bechlal. It talks about obligations. It talks about, right, every time you learn any Gemara, right, what are the operative categories? Asur mutter, chayv pater. Right, forbidden, permitted. Right, yeah, obligated, exempt. Right, very rarely will you say, right, will you see someone, and there isn't even a word that I can think of in Tanakh or Gemara that speaks about rights. It just doesn't exist. Lahid var me'olam. So that makes the entire discussion really difficult. So when you see entire articles written which claim that we have to be matir something, we have to allow something because there's a right to religious experience, right? We should point out that meikar, this is a very difficult claim to make because halacha really doesn't talk about rights, and we have to work really hard, and nachas ruach is about the best we're going to get for any case of religious experience or a right to religious experience. But the notion of a right to anything in Torah is very, very odd. At best, we can say that other people don't have the, can't prevent me from doing something, therefore may lie have the right. But again, as the Rambam notes in his formulation in the first parak of Pirkei Avos, I mean, almost all things fall into one of four out of five categories, right? Mitzvah chiyuv, or obligation, or at least positive, right? Aser megune, right? Forbidden or negative, right? Just, I don't know, disapproved. And then there are some things in the middle that are neutral. You know, his example, I think, is like talking about the groceries or something like that, right? There aren't that many things that are totally morally, ethically, religiously neutral, which is normally where you'd be talking about the place of right. Okay. To give an example from Gemara, right, I put a very famous story in the next source, which is the famous story of the ger who came, right? He, right? There was a ger, or not yet a ger, there was a non-Jew who passed behind someone who was learning, and he heard him speaking about the Big Day Kohen Gadol. So Amar halalu l'mi, he said, who does this belong to? Amar lo Kohen Gadol. So Amru ozo nachri ba'atzmo, so he said, Eilech v'et gayer, let me go and convert. Bishvil shem shuni Kohen Gadol, so they make me Kohen Gadol. Balifne Shamai Amrle Giruni Amanasha to Shani Kohen Gadol. Right? This is Mani Kohen Gadol. Make me, convert me, on condition I become a Kohen Gadol. Right? What did he do? Dachvo Bamana Binyan Shiviadara. He chucked him out. He slapped him. Right? He Balifne Hillel came to Hillel and Girei, and he converted it. Amr converted him. Amrlo. Hi. Amrlo, you're free to join us, but you don't have to. Amarlo, okay, whatever. Amarlo, no problem. Kloma mithin melech elamishio deh tachzichei malchus. He said, look, we're not going to make anybody a king unless he knows what to do. Lehlo tachzichei malchus. So go learn about it. Halach v'kara. So he started reading the Chumash. And kevet she'egia v'azar hakarev yumat. When he got to the pasuk that said, anyone who's a non-Kohen will die, Amar le mikra zalmin emar. Who is this about? Amarlo afilo David melech Yisrael. Even about the king. So Nas Ozo Ger Kalva Homer Batsmo, my Israel Shinikrubanam Lamakom, we took Ava Shavam Karlahem Bini Bakhari Yisrael, Ksivalayam Bazar Karev Yumas. Now if Jews, even the king, are beloved by God, they're the children of God, and if they infringe on the role of the Kohen Gadol are put to death, or Chayef Misa, Ger HaKal Shabom Yimakla V'Tarmilo Achkam V'Kama, me how much more so? Balifnei Shammai came before Shammai Armalo, Klum Roy Ani Li is Kohen Gadol, V'Oksiv V'Tarav Azakrev Yumat, Balifnei Hillel Armalo, Anvisan, and Hillel, Yanuchul Chabrachos Aroshecha, Shekavtani, Tachat Kamfrei Shechina, from your humility, may blessings rest on your head because you brought me under the wings of the Shechina. Liyamim nizdagu shlashim makom echad. They once all met in the same place. Amru kapinusu shul Shammai biksha litardini mina olam. Right, Shammai is there's no real great word for kapdanus, but whatever. We know what kapdan is, right? He was a kapdan. Yes, fine. What? Sure. I'm in Zanuso, Shel Hillel, Kirav nizdagu nizdagu, but Hillel's being chilled basically brought me to the Shechina. Okay? Now what did this story tell us? Right? The story tells us that, right, someone converted on what condition? Right? That he get the glory of a certain religious experience. Right? Now, what's the underlying message of the story? There's a few, right? There's one which is pastoral and one which is fundamental. Right? What's the fundamental lesson of the story? Was Shammai correct in throwing him out in the sense that he had no right to demand it? Yeah. Yes, right? The pastoral lesson is, though, sometimes you have to let people realize that for themselves, because there is a natural inclination that people want, especially religious experience that comes with kavod, right? They really do want it, and we understand that. So Hillel got that, but he created a situation in which the person would realize himself that he wasn't cut out for it. And he wouldn't be insulted by that. He would just realize that that's the way it is, right? Not everybody's the Kohen Gadol, not everybody's the Melech. There are roles, and that's all there is to it, right? Shammai didn't, you know, pass the pastoral part of the pastoral psychology in Tzmicha, right? He threw him out. But fundamentally, right, you learn two things. One is that Shammai's sentiment was correct, right? People do not have the right to force, right, others to give them religious experience, especially religious experience that comes with kavod. On the other hand, right, it's not the best idea to just yell at people and say you don't have a right to religious experience. Sometimes the best thing is to say, okay, well, why don't we look into it and let the other person realize their own limitations, and, right, usually or hopefully they will be able to come to terms with it easier if you allow them to come to it by themselves rather than yelling at them. Yes, Rabbi Kelman.
Two questions. I think one that you addressed, I just missed just the beginning. Why is Nachar Ruach Dafka like referring to religious experience? It seems more like it's not that you won't insult them or that they won't feel
bad. Well, let's get to the case in the Gemara.
Okay.
Let's get to the case in the Gemara. I mean, the way it's used in Psak is religious experience, that's the way it's used in the Gemara. Wonderful. Hold that thought. That's obvious, right? That should be obvious. There's a difference between whether something is utter or mutter. Yes. Let's get to that. Fine. Good. Yes. If you think I wasn't going to get to that question, okay. Of all questions I was going to get to, if we're going to talk about the sugya of Nachal Ruach. Okay, but now let's see the Gemara. There are two Gemaras about this in Shas, basically, right? Anyone here do Daf Yomi? Good. So you should have seen this Gemara very recently. Yes. Good. So the Gemara says, "Amar Shem Rabban Yochanan Lo Lomate Shvus Kalav Einecha Sharei Smicha Einel Mishum Shvus Venechlo Bagdal Yador." The Easter Eid Rabban should not be calling your eyes because, right, five generations of the Nasi and Abezin argued about whether you could do smicha on a karban, meaning, right, whether you could lean on a karban on Yontif, which is only a violation of Rabbanan of using the animal, and yet five consecutive generations of Nasi and Abezin argued about it. Okay, then the Gemara goes through Aldean, right? Is this true? Right? How do you know they're arguing about Smicha and Yantif? Maybe they're arguing about Smicha in general. I mean, do you need Smicha? Fine. The Gemara concludes that, in fact, their machlokes was, can you do Smicha on Yantif or not? So now the Gemara, 1, 2, 3, 4 lines down, says, V'samach, right, this is where after the ellipsis, V'samach, B'nei Yisrael, Somchen, V'ein, B'nos Yisrael, Somchos. Men, males, do Smicha on Karbanos, right, they lean on the Karban before they bring it, women do not. V'yosi, V'rebi, Shimon, Omrim, B'nos Yisrael, Somchos, V'shos. Even though they don't have to, they're allowed to. So Amar V'yosi, Sachli, Abi Eliezer, Pam Agaz, Hayali, once we even had a karban, we brought it to the Esos Nashim, some call of Nashim. And lo b'mnei smicha v'nashim, not because women have to do smicha, elokdei lasas nachas ruach l'nashim, but to give them nachas ruach, right, to give them pleasure, right, pleasure in this experience. V'yisaka daitach smicha v'kol kochu b'inah. And if you think that when you do smicha, you have to do it with your full strength, Mishum nachas ruach dinashim adin avod bekachim. If you have to do smicha with your full strength, right, and you're not allowed to do it, then what is it? Meila, right? You're using the animal, right? I mean, if I lean my whole weight on this table, right, I'm using the table. If this table were kachim, I would be chayiv. If I do this, it's not called using because I'm not actually being supported by it, right? So he says it must be that it's not b'kol. You don't need b'kol kocho because if you did, you wouldn't be allowed to let them do it rishus because it would be mila. So Gemara says, "Lo me'el rabinim kol kocho, damel lo akli yadaycho." So Gemara says, "No, maybe you do need b'kol kocho, but the women they told not to, right? Put your hands lightly, put it on the side." So the Gemara says, "Ihachi lo me'el." So why do you say, right, it's because there's no smicha l'nashem to say there was no smicha here at all? I said, you're right, there's no smicha, but we did it. Okay, and then the Gemara gets into stud and fine. So, what do we derive from this Gemara? Nachas ruach. What does this principle mean? Right, the Gemara says, under certain circumstances, we do something. What do? Today lasas nachas ruach. In this case, l'nashem. What do? What don't we do? Ariel. First, let's start with what we don't let them do, since that was what you asked me, right? You said right before. What we do not let them do is... I mean, generalize it. Right? What's the principle? Like Mar says, we would never, for Nachas Ruach, allow them to do what?
An act.
Something it's usser. Something it's usser you don't do. Right? But that leaves the question open, that what does it mean something is usser? Right? There are three possibilities. Right? Why could something be usser? What? Doraisa? Darabanan or? Or Minach, let's say. Right? The three halakha categories we're probably going to deal with. Right? Doraisa, Darabanan, or Minach. Right? Obviously, those have different gradations. And it's not clear from the Gemara which of those it applies to. Right? Clearly applies to Doraisa. That's for sure. Right? We don't know yet about Darabanan. We don't know about Minach. Right? So that's one thing we know. That Nachas Ruach will never... Right? This recognition of Nachas Ruach will never allow us to be matron as Doraisa. On the flip side, what does it tell us? Two things. One is... Ariel.
Does have a value?
Yes, it has a value, but what has a value? So there's two stages in the Gemara. In one stage, are we letting them do smicha?
Yes,
right? One stage in the Gemara says we're actually letting them do smicha. They're not chayavas in smicha, but they're actually doing smicha. Which means, or could mean, that when does the phrase nachas ruach apply? When we allow them to do something which is not usher, they're not chayavin, but is at some level meaningful, right? It's smicha, right? They have enough b'chayiv in it, but it's smicha. Then the Gemara changes its mind and said, no, maybe you need smicha go kocho, and what were they doing? Not smicha. So, if according to that day, nachas ruach allows us to do what? Or encourages us to do what? Not just allow them to do things which are not chayiv in, but... Well, yeah, meaning allow them to do something that feels and looks like it's meaningful, but it isn't, to make them feel good, right? Now, if I'm just going to point out, right, you see why using this Gemara straight without trying to analyze it a little bit is a little bit patronizing, right? Because it's clear, especially this latter stage of Gemara, the women probably didn't know this, right? They probably did not know that what they were doing was halachically meaningless, right? It was predicated on the assumption they didn't know. That's why you could get away so easily with Nachas Ruach. So I think you have to be careful before you use this source. Obviously, we always let people do things that make them feel good. That may be true, right? But that is definitely more true about people who are uneducated, right, than people who are educated. Right? People who are educated, you don't necessarily, because it's a little bit weird that they should, right... If someone doesn't know, so they actually get a religious experience because they think they're doing something religiously meaningful, that's one thing. If people are educated and they know what you're doing is meaningless...
Oh, if they still... Even if they knew it was meaningless and they still got religious satisfaction doing it, then maybe... You can't prove it.
You can't prove it either way, but right, that's why I'm saying I think it's odd when people go this Gemara straight. Because clearly the original context of the Gemara is not talking about someone who's educated and understands what they're doing is meaningless. Right? You may be able to derive from this Gemara that there's intrinsic value to allowing people to do things that seem to be spiritual. Right? You're right. But it's not an obvious thing, and you at least have to address that question. But so far I've never seen anyone even address that issue. Right? I agree with you. I think... Despite the original concept of Gemara, I think you can extend it, and we'll see that. Also, I will point out, while the original concept of Gemara of this is not lasas nachas ruach l'nashim, right? I'm not going to be patronizing here and claim that's the only time this would happen, because as we will see, right, the poskim didn't take it that way. The poskim assumed that this was not, you know, though I'm sure there are people out there who think that there's only a value to making women feel good because, you know, and that is a very odd sexist position to allow feminist changes, right? But we will see that this is not the only context brought up in Sakh, right? We don't only, it just happened to be the case in the Gemara. And just quickly, the second Gemara on the topic is the Gemara Rosh Hashanah. In Anu, in Ma'akanas Tinokos Milat Goa, Hani Nashim Akvin. Adani Im Ma'akanas Lo Tinokos Milat Goa B'Yom Tov. Amar Rabbi Lakasha Har Yudar Riosi Reb Shimon Tani Daven Israel. Penelzo Som Chen Vein Israel. Som Chos Tiri Huda Riosi Reb Shimon Amrim Nashim Som Chos Rishos. Right, same question. Do we allow people to blow shofar on Yontif, which again is here a violation of the Rabbanan, right? But again, it could be halachically significant anyways, and they assume it's totally in the same machlokas. Okay. Now, first thing I want to do before we move on is to prove two things. One is that, what I think is obvious, that the category of lazos nachas ruach doesn't only apply to women, right? It is a more general category that says, under certain circumstances, there is a value to allowing people to have certain experiences. The second thing I want to do, and this is, right, coming back to it, I'm just talking about with Ariel, is this exclusively to be taken at its minimalist read as saying that there's a value to tricking people who are uneducated anyways and making them feel good? Right? Or does it tell you, no, there really is a value to religious experience. It happened to be in that circumstance you could make someone have a religious experience with something that was not halachically significant. But you could have the same thing by educated people. So now, I'm going to move to the Tshuva and the Masas Binyamin, where I will conclusively prove, at least the Basman Yamim thought that this was both precedent for an intrinsic value to giving people religious experience, and two, he thought this was true even for educated people. My raya is very simple. The question he's dealing with is, and this is why I was going to do it in the summer, is, can a blind person get an aliyah? Shulchan Aruch Paskins, no. Masas Ben Yamin, as we will see, Paskins, yes. Masas Ben Yamin writes, why did he enter into this shaila? Because he was becoming blind. Right? Masas Ben Yamin is no amaretz. Right? And we will see, one of the arguments he uses for allowing blind people to get aliyahs is nachas ruach. Right? But he's talking about himself. Right? So, if in fact this Gemara only meant that there was precedent for allowing people who didn't know any better to feel like they're doing something meaningful, this would be very hard to use, right, as precedent to allow yourself to do something. Right? That would be very odd. I don't know. I think the fact that he uses it is compelling. So, so he says, So he argues, look, I think it's mutter, I think the consensus of poskim is on my side, that it's mutter. Achnazino, filachatchila, karnal severtara, amarat v'suma. V'yimei chorfi, ra'isi, gam kemeretz Rusya, the shchichi, amarat tuba, shalichon, likras betara, and I saw there are many amaratsim, right, the same problem, right? Amarats and blind person, the same problem, which is, right, why is it the same problem for an amarats and a blind person to get an aliyah? They can't read, right? He said, I saw many illiterate people in Russia getting aliyos, so you see the minog is, you see that we think it's mutter. Now listen to this lashon. And I was shocked at those who forbade it. Because how could they decide to throw off the yoke of heaven from these people with fraud and mitzvah, rabbah before semet kazu, especially in a public mitzvah like this? This is not what we learn from Chazal. Because we know there were people who did things they weren't chayavin. That's what he's getting at, right? Michal put on tefillin. Gam ishto shel Yonah, he said, olu l'regel, umevi karban riyah. Yonah's wife used to bring a karban riyah. Uvda shem evin lazar v'samchu. And the case of smicha, that's our case. Kashi kozu kol zeh tov sefta, perik yutez, perik hamotzi tefillin, chom tov shiz man grama, horishus piyad anashim lasos l'var chalein. And this is a principle in general, that even when people are pturos, even when women are pturos, we allow them to do mitzvahs and make a bracha, right? Psak of Ashkenaz. Psak of Raymond Tam against the Rambam. But he darib psachim, and never I got to be Rav Yosef, Rav Sheshes, Mosin Achirim, Yechavazim, Rechim, Rechad, the Shergo, all new, etc. Skip down two lines. Hare Lefanecha, Shechach, Ma'am, Mishnah, Ma'am, and Nicholahem, Levanum, Levos, Israel, Lost to the Kaima, Mitzvahs of Archlan, Ashek, the Shonum, Mitzvah, Savati, Vanu, the Avagazon, Savu, Al Kadkan. The gam miktsas hamitzvah shlachora michu aradavar inu hagod. And now he goes further. He said, not only that, even in cases where doing the mitzvah might have some problem to it. Right? Because there is a potential problem for women to wear tefillin. Namely, their body has to be clean. And this is not necessarily possible by a woman, especially if she's in nida. I don't want to get into this topic, but right, whatever. I'm not going to get into this issue, right? But just see as examples. Furthermore, it looked like chulin when Eishes Yona brought a karban. Despite that, they allowed them to do it. Why? Because these things were actually religiously significant, and therefore, even though they were not chayavos, and there was at least a shemetz of a problem, right? It looked bad, right? That's what he's saying, really, right? These are things, aren't things that are actually usher, but they're things that are potentially problematic or look problematic, but are not. Mitam nachas ruach, k'dam yam berek ein darshan, lo mevneshe smicha benashim, elakadei lasas nachas ruach lenashim. Vim kein. Who adin nami benidon shlofanenu sheish lavater lame arich v'suma she'en limchos biyadam lalos sevatar lavarich kadei sheyu b'chal kabot o malchus shemayim v'kadei lasu lahem nachas ruach. And therefore, here too, we should allow blind people and ame arich to get aliyos, allow them to accept malchus shemayim. And again, remember, he's talking about himself. Right? He is someone who's becoming blind. That was the impetus for writing this tshuva. So, right, if the question, they opened in the Gemara, there were two open questions, right? One is, well, a few open questions, right? One is this Gemara at some level a makor for saying that there's an inherent value to allowing people to have religious experience? According to Masa Ben Yamin, yes. That answers the second question, which is this true even for people who are educated enough to know that what they're doing is, right, not, they're not, at least not chayavin? Yes. Now, we should be careful though, because the case of the Masa Ben Yamin is slightly different. Because the final day in the Gemara of Akfu Yadaychu was halachically meaningless. Is this halachically meaningless, or they're just not chayev? They're just not chayev. Right? So at least things which are not chayevin, there is a value to allowing people to do things that actually have value, even if they're not chayev, even if they're educated and they know that part of the impetus is that we're making them feel good. That's true. What he doesn't go as far as saying is that, right, someone who knows that something is meaningless, right, will tell them, do it anyways. That we don't know from him, right? That we have no precedent for. Fine. What we also learn from him is under what types of problems the nachas ruach circumvent. So he says, well, it seems to only do things that are not actually usher, right? That we know from the Gemara. But even things which seem like they should be usher, we will waive. We'll waive problems of Myers Ayin, of Chashashos, things like that, because of the cost-benefit analysis, we will waive because of the value to allow people to enjoy certain types of religious experience. Okay? Similarly, to show you yet another case where this is extended beyond the women case, there's a truth in the Taj base, where there's a case of a suffix of how many brachos you make at a bris of twins, right? Right. If you look at the question, right? Oh, child, shneidim shenolad echad mal im dai bebracha agad l'shneim. Right. One of them was born without an arla, right? One of them was born without a foreskin. Therefore, right, you need hatavas dam bris. That's what we paskin. But you probably don't need a bracha because it's not a full mila, whatever. So the question is, what do you do? Because parents want their children to have a bris, right? So what he suggests, if you look again after the ellipsis in the second page, so what did I do? I had the parents do the bris of both of them at once. This way, right, you can make the bracha, you feel like you're making the bracha on everybody, even though you're really not. That's right here, they do in a lot of places. What do they do? They bring a cup for each person, etc. So they could give a bracha to each child, so to speak, with their own kos. But they don't make hagafen twice, or asher kiddush you did me beten. I mean, they don't actually make brachos; they make brachos, right? Klali, right? I bless you. You should grow up, you right? Chuppah, Torah, Maisim Tovim, blah, 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 blah. All that stuff. But no, real bracha. Kim ala rishon, ve'im azechiv klal, elah says nachas ruach l'nashim. Now, so what we see here is, first of all, right, he expands it, right? It's not just, I don't know if he means dafka nashim here, just the mothers. I assume he doesn't. I assume he means the parents. But also, what does he say here? He goes slightly farther in this sense than the Maasas ben Yamin, because the Maasas ben Yamin, right, and this is really, he gets this from the Gemara, which is, not only do we sometimes allow people to do things that are, in fact, halachically meaningful, we allow them to do things that are not halachically meaningful, but feel halachically meaningful. Right, so in fact, it does seem to be that there's at least some precedent to say that under certain circumstances, assuming there's no issur involved, right, even if there's some chashos, and even there's some, right, Mars Ayin problems, right, like here, there might be a Mars Ayin problem, right, someone might look and think that you made two brachos, or that you're making the bracha dafka on the child that you don't have to give it with. Mila, still, k'day las nach ruach, we allow people to have certain religious experiences. I agree with you. I don't know whether, Ariel, I'm not convinced that this only means religious experience, because, right, meaning, you know, giving your child a bris and feeling like he's getting a bris and the brachos and everything may not only be about the religious experience, right? That's a religious experience in the context of a very powerful Jewish cultural family experience. So again, I'm not, right? But no one's ever talking about this just, we let you do that, k'day las nach ruach. That's called being nice, right? That's a different story and may not have halachic weight in halachic context. Yes, Yara.
Isn't the case of Malia, I guess, where he's being Motzi Acherim?
The Summa. Yeah. No. We talked about this last year, and we talked about partnership in Nenim, but Pashtus not. Right? The fact, right? Pashtus, you are not being Motzi others in any way that you would actually need to be Chayev. Right? Remember, right? Despite what the Frimmers claimed, based on the Meiri, right? The Derech HaMelech and Psaak is that, right, the only reason that women couldn't get aliyah was because Kavod HaTzibur, which tells you that even somebody who's not chayev, right, can get aliyah, which means aliyahs are not about being motzi people. And as attractive as that svara is, it only appears in a one day in a miri, and nowhere else in Rishonim. You were here? You weren't here. You were here? We're here. Yeah. So probably not. But we're not talking about aliyahs. We talked about that last year. And for anybody listening, no, that is not posted in YU Torah, because I am not that silly. I'm really not. And for anyone who is listening and knows me personally, I do have a recording of it, which I will give out perhaps privately, but not publicly, ever. Okay. Bye, Joe. I love these private conversations to the whole world. Yeah.
Breaking the fourth wall.
What?
Breaking the fourth wall? Yeah.
It's a film, a literary, yeah, where they kind of acknowledge that there's a reader and an audience, and it's not just a story happening.
Outside. Wow. Yeah. I feel so new age. I have no idea what you're talking about. Okay. Let's continue. So let's yet another example here. This is a very famous one. Trumas Adeshen. There used to be a minhag based on Chesed Ashkenaz that women did not come to shul and they were nidas. Right? It was based on a piece of pseudepigraphy called Bryson Maseches Nida, which was ascribed to the Tanaim, is not Tanaitic, but Chassid Ashkenaz thought that it was. And they say, V'alanashim beis nidosan, emi tarti lehem b'yamim ha'noraim, even though normally we don't let them go to shul, I let them go during Yom Noraim. I gav nesharabat midatzim v'leitagnel l'shmo tfilo kriya, shil v'leitagnel v'samachti arashi shamatir, and I let it, because Rashi says, mother, right, because k'day lasus nachas ruach l'nashim, ki hayu lehem itzavon, ruach l'machat lev, shakol min'atvin liyot b'tzibor, v'hema yamdu chutz. And I let them go because it would cause them pain that everyone else is in shul and they're not. Now again, here's a case where there is some religious value to being in shul, right? They're not chayev, right? Being in shul is not that big of a chiyev, right? And obviously, under certain circumstances, other things really are gover, right? Someone pointed out to me that there was an article recently published about pregnant women and something on Yom Kippur. And someone pointed out, and you know, they were pushing for, well, you know, we should allow, you know, people won't be able to experience Yom Kippur if we really, really are mocking on them fasting. And, you know, it's really meaningful for them to be in shul. And, you know, Rabbi Schwartz pointed out the obvious, who's quoted apparently here by someone who'd asked him, which is totally true, that on Yom Kippur, the Ikar Chiyuv Hayom is too fast. And therefore, it's very nice that you feel that it's meaningful and shul. I don't care, right? It is more important for you to fast. But then Rabbi Schwartz went one step further, which I totally agree with as well, because he's obviously correct. Not only is a woman fasting more important than her going to shul, it's also more important for her to fast than her husband go to shul. And if in order for her to fast, both husband and wife have to stay home, then both of them should stay home. Because one of them is a chiyuv d'orais, the ikar chiyuv hayom is inui. The ikar chiyuv hayom is not davening. Period. It's fasting, even if that means staying in bed all day. Even if that means your husband staying in bed all day, or staying around and watching the kids. Whatever it takes, right? So it's not always true. We don't always say, oh, it's religiously meaningful for you to be in shul, and therefore we waive Isurim. That's not true, right? Sometimes we just tell you, you have to get better perspective on things. But it's true that barring all other things, we'll waive things that are not really usur, or only usur midin, right? According to some shitas, which we don't really hold like, as quickly we get here, right? And allow, and take into account nachas ruach. This is in fact that our ma paskins. Some people say that a woman shouldn't go into shul when she's nida, or for that matter, ol yisbal, ol haskir Hashem, ol yigav a sefer, or to daven, mention Hashem's name at all, or touch a sefer Torah. Really, really, it's mutter though. But the minhag is not to. We may libo nagu heter. And when she's not actually seeing dam, but she hasn't gone to the mikveh yet, we allow her to. But even if you are machmir, because it's a lot of pain for them to not be allowed to. Now again, the Ramah, what does he allow you to waive? Right? How does he understand the Shema Sadesh? He only allows you to waive what? Lasos nachas ruach. And we saw this already in the Masa Binyamin, right? Not something that's actually usher, right? He thinks it's fundamentally mutter. But he knows there are some people who are machmir like a shita. He said, even if that's your minag, right, you can be mekel. So what would that tell you? That nachas ruach is a factor even against perhaps sometimes minag, right? Or at least a factor in saying that even if sometimes you're choshish for a shita, right, the fact that it's going to cause people, you know, distress because they want to be in shul, they want to, right? It's enough to at least not be machmir latzes kol adeos. Okay? Yes? Agree this we get from the Ramah? Good. Now, if you look at the Shevet HaLevi, I think he a little bit missed the point here. Right, he said, "Umash shal od asher nishal me'izam akom and rasham isim kasar lahachna sefer Torah lezim nashim v'nashkam." You asked me, "Are you allowed to bring a sefer Torah into the women's section on Simchas Torah?" And he says, "So he says, oh, maybe you want to tell me that it's mutter because of lachas nachas ruach." Right, that's the first paragraph. And then he says, "Tell Yeshu Gazur Shein Lisha Nida Bimei." Because of the ikar mutarim, and even though the Ramah said it's mutter, really, he tells you that there were people who were machmir, even though it's usher. Vegam im lo nagam machmir tefila lamalan adagishag yivin ashkus sefer Torah. And if that's the case, so even if they daven, why should we allow them to touch the sefer Torah? The yesh b'em kamanidos lofamim him. Therefore, we shouldn't allow them to do it. This is very. I think I missed something in this tshuva of Rav Vosner, because I'm pretty sure what Rav Vosner said was, even though it's mutter mikra din, the Ramah testifies to the fact that there were people who were noeg not to allow women to shul. I'm pretty sure the continuation of the Ramah is, but because it's not really usher, if it causes them pain, you should let them go into shul. Right? I think I'm reading the same Ramah. In fact, I know I'm reading the same Ramah. So I'm pretty sure he made his point from the part of the Ramah that was rejected, that the Ramah rejected, as opposed to from the Ramah himself. So I'm not really sure what to do with it. But I guess it... I mean, I get it. At some level he's right, meaning there is a there's a back and forth here. Right? The Ramah clearly was more makil, but there were obviously other people who thought that it was not really usher, and yet they still stop people. So, yes, under all circumstances, not every circumstance, will we allow people to weave certain problems because of nachas ruach. I'm not really sure where he proved it from the Ramah here. The only hint that perhaps I'm getting here, though I'm not really sure, is that he thinks his intuition is that we'll only allow for nachas ruach doing things that were already instituted, not introducing new things, which are potentially problematic. Perhaps that's what he means. I'm not really sure. But for example, that wasn't true in like the way the Tashbait said it, right? The Tashbait really was inventing sort of new things, right? Create a look-alike to a bris procedure to make you feel good. So I'm not entirely sure. I'm not entirely sure what to do with it, but I guess you should know that it exists. Okay. Let's skip the Yosef Om. No, you know what? Let's not skip the Yosef Om. Okay. Now, in general, I think there is much more of a push to allow things for Nachas Ruach. Well, if I asked you, what would be the two things that would push us to allow something or encourage something because of Nachas Ruach? Right? Assuming there's gradations of Nachas Ruach, right? What two things would push us in the direction of allowing or encouraging something because of Nachas Ruach?
Halachic meaning.
What? One is that it actually has halachic meaning, right? The more significant something actually is, the more likely we're going to encourage it.
You mean for the person doing it?
No, like actual, like objective halachic meaning, right? Meaning, and we'll see that in a moment, that's what I'm going to play on, right? The more meaningful something actually is, right, the more likely we're going to allow it. I mean, if in fact it has meaning, it's just that they're not chayiv, right? It's easier to say, well, sure, go ahead, right? The second thing is, how much pain does it cause them to not do it, right? Those would be, the two factors, right? The first factor plays up a lot in it. So you look in the next source. This is Yosef Ometz. Right, he says, "Hinei Adon Reu Hevilan Devarei Rosh Perak Basu Shemar Avya Dechem Nashim Sem Chutz Rishus Avdi Smicha Bit Hakavs Yadayu Avak Avdi Damik Tzasla Avod Bekashim Vodin Bit Kia." Right, one of the things that became a minhag of women was, and this is based again in the Gemara, is to blow shofar. Shehi Chachma Min Malacha Mutar Lutgolem Bafilu Mishiyase Kfar Mutar. And not only do we allow them to come to shul, encourage them to come to shul and hear shofar, we even do women's shofar blowing, which at first glance might have been a little bit weird, right? Because why would we blow the shofar separately, which would normally be a problem on Yom Tov, right? For women, if they're not chayev, but we allow them because, in fact, they're just not chayev, but it is meaningful, right? Umutar lahotzia shofar Rosh Hashanah. Now, if you skip down to the next, right? Now, he goes through the whole din, is mutter, is not mutter. V'li ha-hedyu nira devade ekrik divayatur, but that's a rush, dia rush, balagar avyad, asal, right? He says, and it's even mutter. The actual context of the question was, okay, but is it a tzorech enough to carry it on Yom Tov? Because, right, if you assume that you're only allowed to carry on Yom Tov if there's tzorech tzatz, right, as long as there's some need, so is bringing a shofar to women considered tzorech, considering they're not chayev? And he says, yes, right, it is mutter, right? And he says, because of Nachas Ruach, even from Yehuda it's not, giving them rishus lismoch, v'lovarech, lochein l'r'yosi. According to R'yosi, the way we paskin, mechavis l'mitzvah v'yeshlam schar miha, now here's the key, he says, why does R'yosi say it? Right? By the way, parenthetically, you see that he's taking his ikra, the first stage in the Gemara that assumed that the smicha we're talking about is real smicha and not fake smicha. Right? Since they have some schar, umevarchos, umma gam lem shivim ashamayim, right? And Rabbi Yaakov Marvej got the answer straight from heaven that they should blow the shofar, it's considered tzorech. That I gave you the next one for fun, right? Rabbi Yaakov Marvej, the shutman ashamayim, is, right, this series of tshuvas from the Baya Tosfos that he claims to have gotten straight from God, from the Malachim, right? So he said, "Sha'alti al is the first tshuva in the Shemana Shemaim. Sha'alti al Nashim Shavarchad Alulav Al Mi Shemavarchad Lahen Al Tzkiyah Shofar Im Yesh Avera B'Davar Im Hevi Brachal Vatala Achra Shemun Zuzim Lav." Are women allowed to do brachos on Chayavin? And is there a problem brachal Vatala? And he says, "V'Shivo Heaven answered me. V'Chi Achshar Dore Kol Asher Tomar Elecha Sarah Shema B'Kala." Doesn't surprise me, honestly, that Malachim are poetic. Okay. V'leich emer lehem shuvu lachem lo aleichem, muvarcho es Hashem elokeichem. I hope you're catching all these references from Tanakh, I hope, because otherwise I just can't do anything for you. V'ayed Megillah v'chanaka, u'peirushili ma'matzinu b'megillah, v'chanaka ma'achar yayu b'osan aneis, chayavos b'em varchas aleim. He says, look, my raya is chanaka and perm, that they were part of the miracle, it's meaningful, we tell them, do it. V'lulav nami matzinu smach l'davar she'en lo el olei v'echad, lav yuzo shamayim, and lulav brings you closer to shamayim, v'esho for nami yin shamar kodesh baruch hu, amu l'fanayim malchi yoshev v'chani aleichem, zichrono shiyavo zichrono v'seichem l'fanay l'tova, v'en v'shofar, that shofar has the power to help you coronate God and be remembered before God, v'anashem nami tzvichos yoshev zichrono l'fanay l'tova, and God, and women also want to be remembered by God, l'fichachem v'o l'varech v'lulav v'shofar v'shof v'yadam, therefore they're allowed to. Right, and this becomes, right, again, a sort of a consistent theme throughout Psak, which is if it's actually halachically meaningful, then we encourage women to do it, right? Why not, right? There's good reason. It's considered a tzorach, even though they're not chayev. Okay. Now I want to go through just quickly a few things which don't directly deal with nachas ruach, but I think make similar points. What time is it, people? 38. Okay, so I'm going to summarize a lot of what I have after this. Now, there are other, right, models that we can talk about that are related to this. Right, so far we've talked about mitzvos. Right, one reason why we'd encourage women to do it is because they're just not chayev, but in fact it is a mitzvah. Right, there are other things like that where it's not that it's a mitzvah, but it has religious value intrinsically. For example, the next source here is a famous Jew in the Chasam Sofer. You can read it yourself, where the Chasam Sofer says, look, while Chazal set up Purim and Hanukkah, and therefore they have the status of Derabbanan, they have a kiyum of a Daraisa because there's a Torah value, like a generic Torah value to what? To? What? Thanking God. Right? There's a generic Torah value, like a din daraisa, to thank God, but it didn't have to manifest itself this way. Right? It didn't have to manifest itself in the Purim as we know it, or the Hanukkah as we know it. Right? What he says is, right, saying Hallel on Hanukkah, having Purim, whatever, is an expression of a fundamental din daraisa. It just happens to be this expression isn't the only way it could have been. Right? But what is he essentially telling you? That, right, it's not always that there are things which are intrinsically, this is the mitzvah, you're just not chayev. That's one way of coming up with something that's religiously meaningful, right? Another way of saying there's an actual deraisa value, and we'll find a way of expressing it, right? The way this would play out is, right, if we want to talk about kenei nachas ruach, we would always have a bias towards, right, if you want to make something, right, if someone feels like they don't have enough religious experience, and you want to employ nachas ruach, right? So, one of the ways you can do it is by not creating things that are meaningless that make people feel spiritual, but in fact, finding a substantive way of expressing a Torah value. Right? Right? That's another way of creating actual meaning. Right? Not making people feel good, but giving them something actually is important. Right? I'll give another example in a minute. The Chasam Sofer, however, right? Remember, I said before that one of the things you're not going to do for nachas ruach is matzah or something which is aser. And I said, well, what does it mean something to be aser? Right? It could be deraisa, derabbanan, or minog. The Chasam Sofer himself says, well, if you had to guess, right, what would he say is aser for nachas ruach? Only things are deraisa, only things are derabbanan, even things are minog. Take a wild guess if you know anything of the Pesach of the Chasam Sofer. Wild guess. You have three choices. Even things that are minhag, right? This is obvious. You didn't even have to guess that, right? And that's actually what he says in the next source. Here the case was, right? Should you break down a wall in a shul in order to, right, make the women feel better, right? Because they wanted to be next to this wall, I don't really, whatever. Filoim afurish b'shas, afil rak minag ba'alma, even if it was only a minag, man chashiv man seben lakar minag yisrael, afil arkiz v'sanav, kolch ken alof, school same, shol asker, etc. Right? Even a minag, you would never violate lasas nachas ruach. Okay. Now, coming back to what I said before about finding things that actually have religious meaning, so I think probably one of the cases where nachas ruach comes up a lot in modern discussions of this, it didn't really so much in the original ones as much, but I think it might not be a bad place, is the question of whether we should celebrate a bat mitzvah. So, Rav Moshe Feinstein famously said what? Has anyone ever done this again? No. So, Rav Moshe famously was opposed. Right? And that's the tshuva right here, right? He really didn't like it, okay? I'm not going to read it inside, because I'll get it in a moment. Rav Ovadia said what I think is... why did he oppose it? Because why? Look down three lines. Kol shekein bezeh, shemekor ba meharefomer conservative. I don't know how to pronounce that word, but conservative. conservative, or as you see, whoever translated it, meha reformim va conservativim, right? Reform conservative, right? Therefore, so he says, okay, rakim rota av lazos eza simcha v'beza rashai. If you want to do it in your house privately, fine. But to do a bat mitzvah celebration, you shouldn't do it because it comes from a certain reform. Now, this is another thing you often hear, right? Why should we allow people to do things, right? The motivation comes, or this model comes from outside. Ravadia here, I think, correctly says that that is wrong in this particular case. It does not seem to accord with the sources. So Ravadia was asked the same question, right? Should a woman, Narsha Gila Gilbat Gas Mitzvah, Shemilullah, Shemesh Shana Vyamechad, Aim Lifia Lacha Yishmaram Larach, Lamasibacha Givisuda, O Ain Lasus Kenel, Narsha Gila Bar Mitzvah, Shemenech Vilam Vigila Mitzvah. Right? Should you set up a Bat Mitzvah party or not? And he says, I'll summarize what he says for you, okay? He says like this. Where is the source for the Minag of Bar Mitzvah? Does anyone know this, by the way, of Bar Mitzvah party? So, the Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Lamed Aleph. Yes, Zachariah? What? No? Okay. So, the Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Lamed Aleph says that Rabbi Yosef said, if I hear that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, that a sumah is patur min ha-mitzvos, I'll make a party for the Rabbanim because he was blind. And he said, oh, if I hear that halacha is Rabbi Yehuda, so then I've been doing my mitzvos, in a mitzvah of the Yosef. And then he hears the Gadol Mitzvah of Yosef. In a mitzvah of Yosef, he says, okay, now if I hear that I'm chayiv in mitzvos, I'll make a party. So then we draw the following Kal Vachomer. This is found in the Yom Shor Shlomo, the end of the seventh paragraph of Bava Kamma, in his Kuntres over there on Siyumim. It's also found in the Tshuva of the Chalas Yair, and Tshuva Ayin, and in terms of Siyum, it's found also in the last Tshuva Mar Mitz, Tshuva Kuf Yudet, that we make a Kal Vachomer. If from hearing, finding out that you're Chayiv in Mitzvos, it's enough to make a party, Kal vachomer, you should make a party if you actually become chayev. That's a celebration. That's a simchas mitzvah. Right? That's the argument for bar mitzvah. It is also, by the way, the same argument for siyum. Right? Abayi made a siyum when he made a party when he made a siyum. Right? He invited all the rabbis because if for hearing that you're going to that you're chayev in mitzvahs, you make a party. Kal vachomer for doing a mitzvah, you make a party. Right? That's the argument that's made. Rabbi Felder, who you'll know, right? The Posek at some point of Toronto, in his Tshuvas Sheilat Yishurun, Ibn Ezer Tshuva Lamed Dalet in Meli, uses this argument, by the way, to explain why there's halachic value to engagement, anniversary parties. Because apparently, going through a certain number of years of marriage is actually a halachically significant milestone. So Rav Ovadia then makes a very simple argument, which is, according to the original sources, which explain why there's a reason to have a bar mitzvah party. What should follow logically?
It should apply to women as well.
That's all there is to it. And then he says, Omnam, Agon, Moshe Feinstein. This is the second paragraph. I just summarized everything in the first paragraph. Right? Okay, I mean, you can look. Right? He says, right, she should do it. She should party. She should wear big day Shabbos, etc., etc., etc. Right? V'nirim, Idvarav, Sham, Nogin, right? Look, even read inside it. He said what I just said, okay? Amnam, Agon Rav Moshe Feinstein, Nishavos, and he was against it. Right? And he says, second line, from Tzimum, I don't know why. Sharei Oso Atam, Shekos Mar Shalom, V'yam Tzol Shalom, Gavei Shudas Bar Mitzvah, Shaiach Gav, Legavei Shudas Nara Bas Mitzvah. Right? It just doesn't make sense because the same reason applies. Right, and he goes on, right? He keeps quoting her motion. He says, "Ve'ein dvar mechuvar lahalacha ki minayin lasus chaylukim ka'ila b'yisod right musad." Right, Moshe says maybe only party because you're chay because she become a man becomes chay in public mitzvos. He says, "Where har ekra davar tali b'nasa mitzvah v'ose?" Right, the party is because you became chay. This is something worth celebrating, and therefore, right, he says, right, if you just skip to the end of it. Right, besikum aminak shenogim lasus misibach agigit v'sudas hoda v'sim kol bas mitzvah v'yom neya l'shteim esrei shana v'yamachad hu minak tov v'hagon v'tov sheyom rishlam divrei Torah v'shir z'shavach l'shem yisbrach and should praise God and sing and say divrei Torah. Okay, ulam yesh l'smar obviously v'kadenu l'akali etznius right, you should obviously tanu and do it right if tu v'shem besimcha gilur b'radam v'akub gilur shem derada fine Hashem yisbrach l'im natov l'alechem v'tamim. But right, what's his basic argument, which I think applies to us, is that, what is Rav Moshe saying? Look, is, you're going against Minhag, and there's some shemitz of Isser here, right? It comes from a Tamei source, right? It comes from the conservative form. The motivation is Tamei. Rav Ovadia, I think, compellingly says, Well, no. If, according to the straight halacha, not only is this something that you can do, but it's actually meaningful, right? Not just, right? They're not chaya, but it actually is halachically meaningful. The same logic that dictates bar mitzvah dictates bar mitzvah, right? I don't care where it comes from. It's actually a true expression, even though it's an innovation, right? This is not like telling women do mitzvos, there are mitzvos in grand grandma that actually exist and you're not chayav. And here he's saying, look, I understand it's an innovation, but it makes a lot of sense halachically. It actually expresses the exact same ideal. Right? So I think a totally different right angle of the of this question is not just whether we should allow people, encourage people to do mitzvos they're not chayav in, right? But our actual mitzvos. But in fact, should we look or allow or encourage innovations as long as they're actual expressions of real Torah ideas? And what Rav Ovadia, I think, is very strongly and very compellingly saying is, well, why not? Right? If, right, what's the point of a bar mitzvah, a party, to inculcate that this is something worth celebrating? You should do that for women also. Right? Yes, it's an innovation. Yes, maybe the reason some people did it was for the wrong reasons, but it makes a lot of sense intrinsically, halachically. What I put after this is a discussion of Rav Ovadia, where he just right notes that there is in the case of women making mitzvahs on grandma, there's a machlokas we've shown him whether it's more likely you should make a bracha on a minag or on mitzvahs on grandma, right? Which just sort of complicates the picture, and it notes that right there's a logic to say that it's more meaningful to do a mitzvahs on grandma for a woman because it's a mitzvah they're not chayivin, right? But it's actually a mitzvah. But on the other hand, there's also a logic to saying they should say a bracha on a minag, which, right, you could actually at some level generate a new chiyuv because it's something they're chayven directly, right? So it's not always clear which of these is more meaningful, right? There's actually a din rishonim. Most rishonim hold, right, that it's more meaningful to do something that you're not chayven but is actually a mitzvah. But there are actually rishonim who say it's more likely you can make a bracha on something which is a minag, which you generate sort of a, you create a chiyuv, right, assuming it had basis. Then something you're just not chayiv in. So that's just something to think about. Okay, so to summarize what we have so far, and then I gave you an article here by Rabbi Broid that I think is a very nice article. The Gemara has a principle called Nachas Ruach. In the Gemara, what it does is it allows one of two things. Either to encourage people to do something they're patur from, right? To encourage them to do something to give them religious experience. The second thing is perhaps even create things that look like religious experience to give people that feeling. Right? Because there is apparently a value to that. Now, it's clear in Poskim that you're more likely to employ this when what's being encouraged is something that actually has a halachic value. Now, that could be one of multiple things. That could be something encouraging people to do mitzvahs they're not chayav in, right? Because it gives them, but is in fact a mitzvah, because there's objective religious experience, and that's for, you know, very poetically described in the Shu'at Min HaShamayim, right? Of course, women should do shofar and lulav and whatever, because, it, you know, why not? If the reason for shofar is so that God remembers you, they should be remembered by God too. It's intrinsically meaningful. And that's even a tzorech, right? As we see in the Yosef Elmet, to carry on Yom Tov. Right? Just because they're not chayiv doesn't mean it's not a tzorech, something we actually recognize as a need in other halachic contexts. We're going to be very, very open to that. And as the post can point out, that's even if there's not actually surim. Actually surim, definitely deraisa, almost definitely derabanan, and according to Chassam Sofer, even minag, if it's really violating something which is aser, we're not going to do it. But if it's not violating something which is aser, so and it's actually meaningful, we're going to push for it. Right? There's no reason not to. We'll also, as Rav Ovadia points out, if we're willing and should be willing to innovate for that, right? Even if there's, again, a shemetz of a problem, it looks like there's a problem, right? People haven't done it, it's pashnish, it comes from bad sources. But if it in fact is justifiable intrinsically, halachically, like the way Rav Ovadia argues by bat mitzvah, so then we should encourage it regardless, because again, when we're doing nachat ruach, meaning we're giving someone religious experience, which is in fact religious experience, it's not feigned religious experience, so then we're going to be very, very open to waiving problems of Maris Ayin, waiving problems of social problems, whatever. Assuming there's no actual halachic problem, we're really going to push it through because why not, right? Right? Now, we're less likely to push things through that have no religious meaning intrinsically, but as we see in Poskim, that's also something that you have, right? That's not meaningless, it's just less meaningful, and therefore we're less likely to push it through, but not something that's totally out. But you see, post are much more open to the first type. But you see, for example, and this was in the tshuva of the Tashbates, right, that will make someone think that you're making the brach on both kids of the bris. Because, like, whatever. You know, a bris is a meaningful thing. Okay, so making this baby is not really chayiv. But, like, it is important that when you're bringing people into the Jewish people, that, like, they feel like it's real. Even though it's a little bit fake, that's true. Right, we have the case of coming to shul. Right, where again, as I pointed out from Rabbi Schwartz's example, where everything has to be in perspective when you're doing Nachas Ruach. You can't say, oh, that religious experience is so powerful we can wave Yisurim. No, sometimes you have to educate people and say, okay, look, it's true that we're going to let people come to shul and wave this minhag for not to come to shul in their nida. That's fine. But, right, the example from Yom Kippur is, but if it's going to come at the cost of a real chiyuv, namely fasting, so you should realize that not only does it waive your right to religious experience, right? Sometimes it may change the religious experience that other people think they really should be doing. Because, right, one of the things you have to keep in mind whenever you're doing a Nachas Ruach argument is perspective, right? By Yom Kippur, it's more important for the husband and wife to be home watching the kids so that both of them can fast than for either of them to be in shul. And that's relatively straightforward. So despite what we started with, which is that halacha doesn't normally talk about rights, right? There does seem to be room in halacha to talk about at least something like a right, meaning, or at least halacha has room to negate minor problems to allow and encourage people to do things that are either actually religiously meaningful, or under some circumstances, things which are not religiously meaningful, but under certain circumstances, even things that are not, if it actually makes people feel more connected. I think that is a fair portrayal of how this is developed in Poskim. What I gave you at the end is an article that was on Hirhurim a few years ago by Rabbi Broid, where I think he basically gets this point very nicely, and I think he's basically right. Right? He says, look, we'll skim through it. We don't have that much time. How much time do we have?
5 minutes.
5 minutes. So he says, look, it seems it's all English, so I don't have to read all of it. You can read it inside. I put the whole article. It got a little bit corrupted when I tried to print it, but whatever. It seems to me, from a halachic perspective, there are five distinctly different categories related to women and mitzvah. And again, I don't think it's only women. That's what I pointed out from the Masas Binyamin, right? Which I also pointed out there, by the way, that it seems to me there's a value even people who are educated, right? I mean, it actually is Nachas Ruach is actually a reason to encourage people to do things, right? Or a factor in Pesach to allow, right, to which pushes towards kula. But here he's talking specifically about women. So he says there's five categories. Mitzvah that women are obligated in but no longer do, right? So this, right, he says, if it's a case where people are actually chayav, not just allowed to, but actually chayav and for mishum ma, they don't do it, obviously, no matter what, you push it, right? That, I think, is obvious to everybody, right? If people are not doing something they're chayav in, and then there's some opposition because it's nisht frum, right, we just ignore them, right? If they're actually chayav, I don't care what anybody says, right, just do it, right? Yes, I think this is obvious to everybody. Yes. Okay. Second thing are mitzvah that women are exempt from. Right? Mitzvah neutral. Then there are women things that women are discouraged from and mitzvah that women are forbidden from doing. I think I missed one. Did I miss one? Was that five? Okay, that was five? Yeah. Okay. Right, so he said, right, obviously I think when people are actually chayav, I don't think we have to talk about it. Fine. The second case, right, is a situation where a woman wishes to do a mitzvah that she's clearly exempt from. What she does is a mitzvah for her to do, right, like sukkah and lulav. And here, as we saw, right, the precedent in Pesach is really to push them to do this. The next case, which is messier, is a mitzvah neutral, but causes heightened religious experience, right? Subjectively perceived, his example is dancing with the Torah on Sefer Torah. And here he says, right here, exactly because there is no mitzvah being done, it seems to me that there's a greater need for a subjective examination of both the motives of the asher and the context of the community. Right, there's no reason to label this conduct as usur, but there's also no objective halachic reason to encourage its conduct either. Subjective norms of the community play a significant role in this activity exactly because halachic values are not at play. And here, I think, is right normally where it comes up. Right, things that are actually a chiyuv, there's no question. Things that are not a chiyuv, but are actually mitzvot, the precedent in Pesach really says push people even when there's problems. And don't worry about kavanos, right? That's what Rav Ovadia says, for example, about mitzvah. When something's mitzvah neutral, It does fall under Nachas Ruach at some level, if it gives them religious experience. But here, right, obviously, we pointed out, poskim are much more reticent. If it's something which is totally neutral, just makes people feel good, you have to be much more careful. And there, right, it's going to take a lot more to push us to allow something, especially when there are problems, even non-halachic problems, right? Communal problems, right? We'll waive communal problems when there's actual halachic value. When it just feels that way, right, the need is less, which means the, right, the intrinsic value is less, which means the need pushing us towards it is going to have to be more. And things that are usser, it's the last one, it's pretty easy. Things that are usser. Right? Then the other complicated one is things that are not great, right? Those things, right, again, right, we're going to, in general, right, if someone wants to do something which is actually problematic, even if not usser, right, religious experience is probably not a reason to allow it. What he does point out correctly, and I think this is right, is but you shouldn't try to convince them not to do it by saying it's usser, right? We shouldn't encourage things that are problematic, right? But we also shouldn't call them usser if they're not, right? That's one thing it's important to do. Right? If people are doing it because it feels, you know, religiously important, if it's actually problematic halachically, so we should tell them no, but if it's not actually usser, it's just problematic, then just say it's problematic and that we discourage it, but don't go out of its way to say that it's usser. So I think it's just kedai to read through this article, but you'll see that I think he basically developed the perspective that I was saying. In conclusion, what I think is that halacha really does recognize at some level, I don't know, right, but recognizes that people really want it, and as we talked about last year, I think it's a legitimate factor in of shas atak and psak. And again, it's always going to be a balance. The more intrinsically valuable the thing you're talking about is, the more obstacles it can overcome that we can push aside in favor of pushing people to do it. The more neutral or problematic something is, right, the more likely we are to take, well, if it's neutral, the more likely we are to take in other factors. We're not going to answer it necessarily, but the more likely we are to strongly discourage it unless there's really, really good reason not to. When things are problematic, right, there's almost nothing that's going to allow us to encourage it, but sometimes we still have to keep perspective, right, because the drive is powerful, and at least we shouldn't say that something goes to where it's not, because we should respect the drive even if we think that it's being manifested incorrectly. Okay, time for mincha.